Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
Now, Aisling Mar has joined me in studio this morning. She was Dublin Camogie captain when the Scots issue came to a head earlier this year. And the timing couldn't have been better for Ross Whittaker, the award-winning documentary maker who was following the Dublin Camogie team at the time, along with other Camogie squads around the country. Well, a new two-part documentary series is coming to RT Television on the 6th and the 13th of November called Camogie Inside the Championship. And Aisling Mar is here. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for being here, Aisling.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now listen, you're Dublin vice captain now, and you've also just won the Dublin Camogie Championship for the fourth year in a row with your home club St Vincent's. What did you think when you heard this proposal to make a documentary about the Camogie Championship?
I thought it was a great idea. It was kind of already in full swing, to be honest, by the time I heard about it. So probably a little bit surprised as time went on when I saw the amount of access that he was getting and the behind the scenes stuff that they were going to be exposed to. But delighted to have him there and delighted to be able to get the game of Camogie to a wider audience.
You're superb in it. And strange, you know, it wasn't orchestrated, but the whole Scots issue blew up when Ross was filming with you and you were a prominent voice on behalf of players. When you look back now, Aisling, can you believe that there was such a furore over what you were wearing?
No, is probably the shortest answer I can give you to that. It was a really busy year, I suppose, over the last couple of years, to be honest. Camogie seasons have been busy with on the field and off the field activity. So I guess there's never really a dull year in Camogie, but definitely a particularly interesting one, I guess, for Ross and his team to be in there. And I think the whole kind of reaction and the magnitude that the Scots issue took on definitely was not anticipated at the time.
And also, I thought it was very moving. You get emotional in the documentary when you're reading the messages of support from parents and players. I mean, it made me realise it was a very big deal for you to lead on that issue, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And to be honest, I guess the magnitude of that issue probably only became apparent to me as time went on. Mm. Like, obviously, it was a significant issue for Camogie players in general. It has been for a long time, hence why I suppose it manifested in the way that it did and the protests took on the scale that they did. But I guess as time went on and, you know, the public support and the support that we got within Gaelic Games family and Camogie family in particular from younger players and younger players' parents, I guess that really showed me how significant this issue was for other players outside of senior inter-county teams. And I guess that made it hit home for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a brilliant moment. Tell me a little bit about St Vincent's and your own career in Camogie with club and county.
Yeah, I am very, very fortunate to be a St Vincent's Camogie player. I suppose like anybody who plays inter-county, your club is where you start. It's where you'll eventually finish. And it's the team that's going to mean the most to you probably throughout your entire career. So really, really fortunate to be from a club as significant and as strong as St Vincent's. You see in the documentary, my home house, literally the back garden backs on to Vincent's. Yeah. So I've slagged my mother before saying, you know, if she'd bothered to drive me to soccer or boxing or something like that, I could have had a professional sporting career, but I wasn't getting much further than Vincent's with how close it is. But that's been a huge blessing to me. All my friends kind of that I grew up with in the area have all been within Vincent's. Yeah. And it probably nearly has that feel of kind of a country GAA club.
A parish.
The community being so local. Yeah. So it's a really, really special group.
How have you fared with injuries in your career?
Really well for a while and then really not well for the last while. So I'm 29 now, so I guess I'm at that point in my career where the injuries have been catching up on me the last few years. I was very fortunate to begin playing with Dublin at a young age. I think I was 16 when I started playing with the Dublin senior team, so that's kind of 13, 14 seasons on the trot now, which begins to take a toll. I've had a number of injuries, especially over the last couple of years. I'm very fortunate. Fergal Kern is a very good friend of mine who's a very accomplished physio and has had me over and back to London for surgeries and all the rest in the last couple of years, so it's keeping me on track just about.
And
Chief Ryan, our Dublin physio as well, is excellent, so I'm in good hands from that perspective, which has kept me motoring.
And I know because of it, you missed a few matches this year. That must be tough, is it?
Yeah, it's absolutely brutal, to be honest with you. There's no two ways about it. And I think it's something that you actually see really well in this documentary. is not only, I guess, the quantity of time and energy and effort that players and teams put into it, but how quickly that can be pulled away from, you know, a player individually. But I guess, you know, so for me personally this year, I picked up a calf tear just before our Kilkenny game, which was kind of make or break for our season at that point. We'd had bad results before that and needed a win out of that. And just the Tuesday before it, we went to do some sprints in the warm-up and I just felt my calf go. And it's a difficult one to judge, to juggle, because like for me personally, I'm devastated, but the show goes on and the team still has to play and the team still has to win the match, and it's not about you. As soon as you're unavailable, somebody else has to take over. So yeah, it's a tricky one.
You're also involved, Aisling, with the GPA, the Gaelic Players Association. What's your role there?
Yeah, so I'm co-chair of the NEC, which is a group of kind of this 20 players from across the country, across the four codes, so hurling, football, ladies football and camogie. And I guess we sit in on a committee where we make a lot of the strategic decisions for the GPA and try and kind of identify the areas that are most relevant or most impactful to players where we need to put our energy and our focus.
Yeah, which is great. Do you get frustrated with the pace of progress on integration? You know, this is, of course, the joining up of all the different organisations, the GAA, the LGFA and the Camogie Association. Do you get frustrated with this pace of change?
Yeah, I think so. Like, look, obviously, it's a huge process. You know, there are three significant organisations who've been around a long, long time and have worked independently for a long time. And it's not going to happen overnight to click our fingers and amalgamate them. I do understand that. But I guess, as we've said, you know, I'm 29 years of age. I've had a string of injuries at this point. How many years I have left is anybody's guess. But I guess for a player in my position, you know, I'd love to play under an integrated structure. I'd love to leave the game in a position where I know that the players coming up onto the teams that I'm leaving are going into an organisation where they can be a member of the GAA and they can have those resources and facilities and supports. And I'd love to see it happen before I finish up playing, but I think it's just hard to know at the moment whether or not that's a realistic possibility.
Yeah, very hard to know. But I think, I mean, do you recognise the women, say, who set up the organisations in the first place, Aislinn? I mean, things clearly need to change now, but they were probably doing their best making sure there were competitions for women and girls, would you say?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, without a doubt. You look at how old the Camogie Association is as an organisation, you know, more than 100 years now they've been around, and you think about what society would have been like then and the opportunities that would have been there for women and girls to play sport. And, you know, there probably wasn't any is the short answer there. So it was monumental, the work that would have been done by trailblazers at the time to create that access to sport, and not only to sport, but in my biased opinion, the best sport in the world for women and girls. And, you know, that's paved the way for Camogie to become what it is now. And like, you know, we obviously mentioned the Scorts there already. You look at the uniform that would have been there for women and at the time and what they would have had to wear. And I suppose it would have been finding a way to fit into society and play sport and be involved in a high level sporting game, but doing it in a way that was acceptable to wider society at the time. And I think, you know, we've seen the evolution of Camogie throughout the past 120 years, and I think there's been a number of things that have changed and improved in the game since then. And I think that the next best step for women and girls is to integrate into the GAA Association and to allow that kind of equal access. But I don't think that for a second that should take from the work that was done by those women who originally founded Camogie.
Which is great. And not to take anything from women's football, but why do you think the LGFA is a step ahead of Camogie in promotion and attendances, as people say?
It's hard to answer. If I had the answer to that question, I'm sure it would have been fixed by now. And look, there's a lot of people working really hard within the Camogie Association and doing a lot of really good work, and the game is growing, it is getting bigger and bigger. But there's definitely more that can still be done. You know, you see those kind of average 30,000 figures of attendance at female finals in Camogie, and you know, LGFA is probably up nearly at the 50 more consistently. So there certainly is something that the LGFA are doing more effectively than Camogie are. I do think the partnership that the LGFA have with TG Cahir is really impactful. Just that kind of consistent access to games throughout the year and the quantity of games that are shown on TV. The partnership that Camogie have with RTE is excellent when the games get shown, and it's so fantastic to have finals on RTE, but we need more games there, you know. So it's kind of traditionally been the All-Ireland final. In the last couple of years, we've added the semi and the quarter, which has been a significant point of growth. But we need more matches throughout the year so that people can really get on board with the Camogie Championships.
And for the game itself, I know the rules changed a bit a few years ago, didn't they? The game is better now. Do you think, as a player, do you feel that?
Yeah, 100%. I think there was a significant, you know, change when we brought in that physical contact rule with Camogie. I think, you know, we saw that there was a number of finals probably 4 or 5 years ago where there was a very high percentage of the scores were from frees because it was kind of a stop-start game and it made it difficult to really get on board with the match and really get kind of invested in it as a supporter and enjoy the spectacle. I think there's been significant improvement since then to allow that strength and physicality that we know Camogie players have with the quantity of time that's spent, you know, with S&C coaches in the gym nowadays. So I think that coming through in our games has really improved the spectacle at Camogie.
Yeah, and finally, I mean, you're a brilliant player, but it's a serious commitment, Aisling, playing inter-county. And when you win with the club as well, the season is very long. I mean, what does your partner Laura make it of all? I mean, it's hard to switch off. I know you've got a camper van and stuff, but is she involved in sport too? Because it's a massive commitment from
you. Yeah, yeah. It's probably a bigger commitment from the people around me, to be honest, than it is for me, because, like, selfishly, I get to go out and play and do something I love and be involved in it. And for, you know, my family and for Laura, I guess they're making the sacrifices of not being able to go on holidays or have me at events or not being able to go out for a few drinks or whatever it might be. So they probably get less of the kickback even than I do from the sacrifices that I choose to make or want to make. Laura's very understanding and very accommodating. She probably wouldn't have lasted this long if she wasn't. And like, she herself is a performance nutritionist and does a lot of work in Gaelic games. So she does have...
She gets it.
She gets it. Yeah. She gets it, and she keeps me in line.
Yeah, which is
in
great.
In terms of nutrition as well.
Yeah, it's great in a couple when you both get it. You understand your lives. Now, finally, do you think you'll keep going in Camogie? You're still playing at the top of your game for a good while longer. No intention of stepping back, hopefully?
That's probably a question for my physios more than it is for me. No, look, I'm very fortunate to be in another Leinster campaign at the moment with the club, St. Vincent's. So, look, full focus is on that, getting through it, hopefully making that year last as long as we possibly can. I'll enjoy that journey while I'm on it, and fingers crossed, if the body holds up, we might have another chance to go again with Dublin.
It will, Aisling. Defo. Now, listen, Camogie, Inside the Championship goes out on RT1 television on the 6th and the 13th of November at 10:15. Dublin Camogie vice-captain Aisling Maher, thank you so much for coming in, and good luck to St. Vincent's in Leinster.
Thank you very much.